Elissa Walker Campbell delivers sports the way you want it. Big names, bold interviews, beyond the X's and O's. Think big. The Big E Sports Show.
Elissa Walker Campbell, we want to welcome you back this weekend on the Big E Sports Show. We are continuing to celebrate the brand new year. And how about those Oklahoma Sooners with their impressive win in the Fiesta Bowl against Connecticut by 28 points? Oklahoma returned to the BCS Bowl after a year away and certainly made the most of the opportunity. Bobby Stoops Sooners, they were business as usual against the Big East champs. We are delighted to welcome back on our program our inside source for Sooner football. He is the senior writer with OU Insider, recruiting expert, and you can also hear him on the radio airwaves in Norman, Oklahoma on 1400 AM KREF. Happy New Year, James Halen. How is Glendale, Arizona? I hope you're on your best behavior.
You know, E, I'm always trying to be on my best behavior because nobody knows me there. So if I do dastardly things, who's going to know, right? I mean, but I'll always run into somebody that goes, hey, I can't believe you were doing that. So I've always got to be on my best behavior. And Happy New Year to you. And Glendale was cold. You know, you go to Arizona and you want 70-degree weather and you want to be able to run and all that. And you don't want to have to take your beanie and gloves and tights and everything to run in and work out in, but it was cold. It was 43 degrees, 42 degrees. But the great thing, I'm talking to Connecticut's left guard. He's really, really good, and I'll think of his name in a second. But I'm talking to him, and they were fun to deal with, all these guys, and, you know, and Matthew Oliver. And so I go, well, it's turned cold. I'm sure you guys are disappointed. He goes, disappointed? My family's swimming. I said, what? He goes, you know, it's 18 below zero back home. We're swimming. He goes, it was 48 degrees when we got here. He goes, I've got 17 relatives here. As soon as I got off practice, I joined them. We're all at the pool. We're sunbathing.
Yeah.
Because the sun was out, E. But, I know you would sunbathe in 40-degree weather, but, that's not for me. But those Connecticut guys, they would have joined you. You know, you guys could have drank Mai Tais together or something.
Well, you know, you rejoice. I'm a Northwest gal, so growing up in Montana, you know, if it got to be 10 degrees or 20 degrees, we'd be, like, celebrating, like a Chinook is coming. Things are warming up, you know, in that type of weather. You certainly
have been right out there with them then in your string bikini and having a good time. And, you know, those guys, I was still amazed, though, but the Oklahoma guys didn't fall for it. I asked DeMarco Murray, hey, you hanging around the pool? He goes, you kidding me? It's freezing out here. It was cold, but it was a great, great game. I think the Fiesta Bowl does a great job. Now, I'm very rarely disappointed in any bowls I go to. They all try to put their best foot forward. They always feed you way too much, and it's good food. And they always have a number of media opportunities. And usually the players and the coaches, you know, they're willing to talk to you. The only one that's not really enjoying his bowl prep is Kelly at Oregon. I haven't seen one interview yet that he's smiling or looking as if he's having a good time. But for the most part, this was a fantastic bowl to go to. And it's interesting. I think I'm a good reporter. I think I'm on top of things. I think I have instincts. I hung around Randy Etzel for 5 days. I shook his head. I was standing right beside him. I looked him right in the eyes. I watched his expressions. I saw him talk to his players, hug his players. I saw him talk up the University of Connecticut. I saw him fire up the media, how good Connecticut is going to be in the future. I never got one inkling that Maryland was his favorite job of all time, his New York Yankee job. I never got one inkling he was leaving Connecticut to go to Maryland.
Well, you have to wonder what his players were thinking, too. How stunned were they?
Well, they're mad. I mean, you read some of the comments. I haven't had a chance to talk to any of you guys personally, but you read their comments. They're mad about it. From what I heard, when their star running back, Jordan Todman told everybody, or told his coach, "Hey, I'm going to leave early for the NFL," they had kind of there was somewhat of a tense moment. And Etzel said, "All right, if you're going to leave, you're going to tell your teammates in a meeting. You're going to walk right into the locker room. You're going to tell them all that you're leaving and you're leaving this program." So Todman went in there and told them all. All right, that got out by the time we had the post-game press conference. And so it was kind of set up for one of the Connecticut television guys to ask Todman, "Hey, we understand that you have an announcement." So then he announces that he's coming out. Then we find out Etzel doesn't get on the plane with the team. He goes to Maryland. Obviously, he had already been negotiating that contract. They go over the final details. He signs those details. Becomes the coach at Maryland, and he hasn't talked to one player at Connecticut yet. from what I understand, he started texting some players, and he got on some kind of conference or speakerphone with them, and that's how some of the guys found out. I don't know if he's met with them yet. I mean, I guess he has. I haven't really seen anything about it. But why do you make your player stand up in front of all the team to announce you're coming out like he's doing something wrong or leaving the program or something, and yet here you've got your situation, and you don't talk to anybody? You don't tell one player?
It certainly was very stunning. I guess the one thing that kind of surprised me was, where was Mike Leach in all of this? I thought that he was going to be the guy that would get the nod from Maryland.
I hear Mike's pretty upset about it. Mike thought he was going to get the job at Maryland as well. Mike had a good interview. He knew the folks at Under Armour very, very well. I think Maryland needs a Mike Leach. I think Mike Leach actually is a better fit for Maryland than Randy Edsall. I think you need something unique at Maryland to make it work. I think there's certain programs that are pretty good, but if you don't have somebody unique, then I don't think they're really going to be that successful. That's why I don't really think Tommy Tuberville, even though I've impressed with Tommy, I don't think it's really going to be a fit at Tech. And heck, he's already trying to get out of there. He applied for the Miami job and, you know, and other factors. I think Mike would have been, you know, even though he loves Key West and he loves warm weather, I think he would have really fit in at Maryland because he's a little unique, a little quirky, and he could recruit there. I was impressed with Randy Edsall. He's a very impressive guy. In fact, I was shocked to find out he's 53. He looks like he's 41. He's in great shape. When you listen to him talk, you believe him. But still, he's like a lot of other coaches up there, and I think Maryland needs somebody pretty unique, and we'll see. I mean, he did a great job at Connecticut. We'll see if he can do it again at Maryland. I just can't believe, though, that's his all-time dream job. You know, he played at Syracuse and coached at Syracuse. Why isn't that his dream job?
Well, I know that you're impressed, you know, with Randy Edsall, certainly what he was able to accomplish with UConn, and they're in the Big East, but what did you think about it in this particular matchup? I mean, was it one of perhaps the most lopsided pairings in the 2010 postseason landscape when you look at that?
And if they were still playing today, the OU receivers would still be running through the Connecticut secondary wide open. They just couldn't match up and cover them. And I know that they bragged that they had 19 interceptions, and they had another pick six for a touchdown. But all day long, Landry Jones had one to two receivers wide open, and he could always have a choice where he wanted to throw the ball. At any time, he could come up with a big play in the passing game. And even though Connecticut tried hard to stop OU's bubbles, they still were able to average 6-7 yards on each bubble screen. And they ran the ball just well enough with DeMarco, and those bubble screens act as if they're a running play. They were just unstoppable against Connecticut. Connecticut is a very good football team, but you find out the difference in teams really in skill positions. Because Connecticut in the down lines, they were equal to OU. But they didn't have the skill players, the skill personnel, to match up with OU on either side of the ball. OU basically covered their receivers in man coverage with their corners and brought one of their safeties up. And they basically played three back in the secondary. And the rest of the time, they got after Todman and Connecticut's running game. And that's a credit to Todman that he finished with, 123 yards, I believe, in the game or something like that. That shows you right there. But this was a mismatch in a number of ways. Connecticut was very good in special teams. They got the kickoff return for a touchdown. That was the one area they were supposed to be better in, and they probably were. But this was a mismatch, and Landry Jones has put himself into a position where he is now a Heisman Trophy candidate. If he's not, you haven't been paying attention. The criticism of this young man has been amazing all year. It's almost like he can't throw an incompletion without everybody wanting to bench him. What everybody fails to remember, Sam didn't complete every completion either at OU. There were a couple he missed. He didn't win the national championship, and he's great. Sam has been fantastic. But they have another really fantastic quarterback in Landry Jones, and you know, he deserved the MVP, and he'll be better next year because he studies like Sam did, and he's in that film room all the time. And the Sooners are just loaded for bear with Travis Lewis coming back at linebacker, and Ryan Broyles is going to come back. And, you know, the Sooners are going to be really good next year.
Well, Ryan Broyles certainly was Landry Jones' favorite target. That was one of my biggest questions, you know, in terms of returning Travis Lewis. That's huge for him to be returning. But you are saying that Ryan Broyles, he's going to come back next year?
Yeah. I mean, he hasn't announced it, but
have you talked to him?
He's He's indicated to me that that's what he's going to do. And he got a second round grade from the NFL. Obviously, with another great year, he can parlay that into a first round grade, which would mean a lot more money. And I realize the labor strife in the National Football League causes you to at least hesitate when you make those kind of decisions, because you don't know what kind of rookie scale or is going to be set up. But still, first round money is still going to be better than second round money, no matter how you shake it and no matter what you do. Yeah, you know, you could get injured and you can run those risks, but you know, you don't play football thinking you're going to get injured all the time. And I think he'll come back and have another year. And if Landry's not a Heisman Trophy candidate, it'll be Ryan.
You're listening to the voice of James Hale, 1400 KREF in Norman, Oklahoma. Of course, he is also the senior writer with OU Insider, always producing terrific pieces. And, you know, that is huge news. As you were just saying, James, announcing on our program that wide receiver Ryan Broyles will return. Also, junior linebacker Travis Lewis. You know, what were the factors going into that, him making that particular decision? I mean, is this the best decision for Travis Lewis? I mean, he is a special player. How high could his stock have gone in the NFL draft?
He got a third-round grade, see? And at the game, at the Fiesta Bowl, I was one of the last guys to interview him. And of course, I've covered him since he's been in high school.
He's a lot of fun, isn't he?
Yeah, and I walk over to him, and we start talking. First of all, he supposedly got sick at Fogo de Chao because he ate too much. He denied that. The rest of his teammates ratted him out, though. And he was mad at his teammates for ratting him out. But, you know, that's what being a part of a football team's all about. So anyway, but he told me, he said, you know, he said, I've had a pretty good year. But he goes, I'm second-team all-conference. I didn't reach my goal for tackles. He goes, I don't think I'm that good in pass coverage. And he goes, I just started looking at my game, and I said, you know what? I can get better. I need to get a lot better. He goes, when I hire an agent, I want to be able to give that agent something to take with him. Okay, I'm going to be a three-year starter, you know, parts of a four-year starter. That's great, especially at Oklahoma. He goes, but I need to be first-team all-conference. He goes, I need to be first-team all-American. He goes, I need to be a Butkus finalist. He goes, I need to reach 120 tackles. I need to do this and that. And I thought to myself, this guy is really something else, because most players are afraid to evaluate themselves like that. They're afraid to look at film and go, boy, I'm not very good here, or I'm not very good there. I don't think Travis is one of those guys. And from what I hear through the grapevine, he met with Coach Venables and said, here's what I think. And, of course, Coach Venables echoed every one of those statements and said, you can be a lot better player. Let me tell you about 12 other things you miss when you're on the field. So they start going over all these things. And Brent's probably told him these things throughout the year. But at that point, Brent knew that Travis needed information. He needed to know, where do I stand, Coach? Can I play in the league? And Brent told him, yeah, you can play in the league right now. He goes, but we can just make you a better player where you have a bigger impact if you'll come back one more year. I can make you a first-round draft choice.
How does that happen, though, James? What does he have to do in the offseason to take his game up a notch, as you're saying?
First of all, he needs to become more of a football aficionado. He needs to become more of a football expert, continue to study film, get to know those offenses even better. Second of all, he needs to continue to loosen up his hips. He needs to work on backpedaling, cutting out of a backpedal. Understanding the passing game, become fluid in it. This guy was a 1,600-yard rusher in high school, and he can't catch a ball. You know, and he talks about his hands have left him since he's lifted weights and all that. He ought to work on the jugs gun because, you know, he gets his hands on about six other passes, seven other passes a year.
Right.
So he can just become a better player. I mean, get in the weight room, get bigger and stronger. He's still only a 230-pound guy, 232-pound guy. He's not the biggest linebacker out there, so you know, he can put on weight. He should be a 238-pound player. And, you know, he's a good tackler, but he's not a rock'em sock'em, knock-you-back tackler. Now, it doesn't matter. Get the guy Gant down, and I understand that. He's becoming more physical. The more he plays, the more confidence he gets. He knocked himself out a couple of times this year. So he can just become a better player, E. You know, he's one of those players you watch, and you say, hey, he's really good. But you don't really sit there and watch him and think that he's all that good all the time. You think he can become a better player or be a better player.
Well, that's remarkable that you say that, because he's ninth all-time in career tackles right now, heading into his senior year.
He's played a bunch. You know, he's been out there a bunch. I mean, Brent threw him out there really early, and, you know, and he plays a bunch. He hardly ever comes off the field. And, you know, that's what I mean. He's technically he's going to be a four-year starter. First year he's on campus, You know, ended up starting, got injured, and, you know, coming in and came back. And he's been a fixture in that defense for a long, long time.
Isn't he fun, though, to be around? You've got to share a little bit about as far as his personality. I mean, he's so dynamic.
Well, he's a comic. He's funny. He brings his world into it. In other words, you know, the 20-year-old angle, 21-year-old angle. we look at him and go, what does that mean? And he goes, let me break it down for you old guys. He'll say that all the time. You know, here's what we mean. And he's always doing something with his hair. He does more things with his hair than you do. He doesn't quite get the results you do, but it is kind of interesting. You haven't gone the mohawk look yet at your station yet, right?
No, I can't say that's ever going to happen, James. I'd like my hair down, not up.
Well, I understand, and the rest of us like it down and not up too. So, but he's funny. He's got a great sense of humor. I think he lives life and tries to have fun with it. He's not afraid to make a statement. After the spring game, he came in an all-white outfit because he wanted to let everybody know that his team was eating steak because they won and not beans, and he wanted to dress up for the affair.
So he was an Elvis look?
Yeah, that's exactly right. He had the big glasses and everything. Of course, Brent told him if he ever wore it out that he would put him in a headlock and walk him around campus. You know, they spar like brother and older and younger brother. Travis tells Brent to stay in shape, and Brent is in amazing shape. Brent works out all the time. I think he's even under his playing weight. He played at 210 pounds at linebacker for Bill Snyder at Kansas State. Started for 2 years. I think he's about 210 pounds now. That's the kind of shape he's in.
How old is Brent Venables, too? He's 40, 41?
Top of my head. I mean, that's, gosh, what, 43 maybe?
Yeah.
He's still a young guy, believe me. You know, but Travis got mad at him about something, and anyway, Travis is walking out of the room, and Brent's doing an interview with us. He goes, "Hey, Coach, you stay in shape. When I graduate, and I come back, you stay in shape because we're getting after it. WWE style. We're setting up the cage. You can bring all your gang. You can bring your family. I got my family. We're getting after it."
Oh, I love
it. Brent's giving it back to him, going, "Hey, bring it on. Bring it on." You know, and in most, I don't know. You know, a lot, you just don't see that a lot of time between player and coach, but that's exactly what they have, and I think it's refreshing. I think it's. And that's what Travis brings to the table. Oh, he can be hokey. I mean, he can be, I don't know. He's not afraid to act, you know, nerdy or whatever. He's very confident in his own skin, and I think it's great because he has a great sense of humor.
Recruiting expert James Hale is with us this weekend on the Big E Sports Show. We want to direct you to our radio website. That is eradiosports.com, and you can email us at info@eradiosports.com. James, where can we direct the listeners to check out some of your articles? You're the senior writer with OU Insider.
OUinsider.com. We're a new 24/7 network affiliate. Of course, we just had the Under Armour game yesterday, and our national people were there, and they're going to be at the Army All-American game. And we cover everything OU. We cover every sport. Jack Spates is going to retire after this season.
18 years. I can't believe Jack. I remember when he was hired.
You just told everybody exactly how old we are. Thanks.
That's okay. You got a good, 13 years on me, right?
Well, you know, Jack's been around for a long time. So anything OU, and we'll get ready for spring football. You know, it's interesting, at Oklahoma you have the season, then you have recruiting, and then you have spring football, then you have the off season, and then you have the season again. So football never stops around here, and on our site we cover, you know, the Sooner football angle for the year round.
Okay, the headline coming out of Norman, Oklahoma is earlier this week, Oklahoma defensive end coach Bobby Jack Wright, who you're very close with, he interviews for the head coaching job at Texas State. What do you know about this situation?
Well, Bobby Jack has never hid the fact that he'd like to be a head coach before he retires. He's been a great assistant coach. I mean, great. He has been at Texas and Oklahoma. He's recruited some of the best players in the country. Heck, he coached Darryl Green at Texas A&I. He's a legendary coach out of the state of Texas. Now, he'll probably return to the state of Texas to live when he retires. But he loves it at OU. He's a very popular coach. He's one of the best coaches we deal with in the media. And as a head coach, he would be dynamite, I think. I'm not sure why he's never really been able to get a chance up to this point. He's going to be great with the media. I think he's going to be great with the boosters, the people that support the program. And he's definitely a very good X's and O's coach, and he's definitely knows football. So he'd like to get that job. Gosh, you hear Dan Hawkins is involved with it. Francione was. I hear he backed out of it.
Rocky Long?
Rocky Long is involved with it, the offensive coordinator at Nebraska. There's a lot of people. But, you know, if you're a program in the state of Texas, Bobby Jack Wright would be a great hire for you. I think he'd be great anywhere, but especially in the state of Texas. And I think Bobby Jack would like that chance before his career is over. Bobby Jack's in tremendous shape. He looks like he's 40 years old, but he's in his 60s now. And, you know, I think he would like to have that kind of opportunity to be a head coach towards the end of his career. And let me tell you, Texas State could do a lot worse than hiring Bobby Jack Wright. He would be a great hire for them.
Okay, one of the hires that we've got to talk about in terms of the coaching carousel and movement, we've not had you on our show in a while. So what about Oklahoma's offensive coordinator, Kevin Wilson, going off to Indiana, looking to certainly change the image there? Was that a surprise to you?
No, Kevin's real talented. Kevin's tenure as offensive coordinator at OU has been tremendous. When Sam was at quarterback, especially in 2008, that may be the best offense in college football history. They were rocking. They posted some amazing numbers. And Kevin did an amazing job here at OU, won a number of championships, worked with a number of different quarterbacks, installed an offense that was diversified, versatile. OU can run the ball. They can beat you in the run game. They certainly can beat you in the pass game. And very few teams are passing the ball as well as Oklahoma is and has under Kevin Wilson. The shock to me really is that Kevin didn't get a job before this. I know he was up for two or three. I think he's, 52 years old or 51?
Right.
He's got a large family. You know, he loves his family. Kevin's got a great sense of humor. You know, I'm not surprised at all he got this job. Kevin knows the Big Ten. He coached up there at Northwestern. He knows that area. He played or coached at Miami, Ohio. You know, that's this part of the country. And I thought it was a great hire by Indiana because Kevin is well-networked. He'll be able to put together a great staff. He knows that area in recruiting already. Kevin was a very good recruiter. Kevin can be a dynamic personality. He's very honest with the media. And, you know, in this day and age where coaches try to sidestep you and they coach speak, and, you know, Kevin doesn't try to side you. Now, you have to listen to him, and he's going to take you in a number of different directions, but you'll get to his point, what he's trying to say. I think he's a great hire. I think he's going to do a great job. But here's the strength of Bob Stoops and his staff. When he hired Kevin Wilson, he didn't know Kevin Wilson from Adam. Kevin was just doing a great job at Northwestern, and Bob went out and got him and heard about him and liked his offense there and brought him in under Chuck Long. When Chuck left, he just promoted Kevin to the job. Well, Bob's always thinking ahead down the road. He knew eventually Kevin was going to be, you know, a head coach somewhere and leave the program. So he brings back Josh Heupel at the time, he goes and gets Jay Norvell, who's a buddy of his, who played with him at Iowa, to come in. Jay had already been an offensive coordinator. Josh had not been, but everybody knew that he was a head coach or an offensive coordinator coach in waiting. So Bob's never really had to go outside of the organization or outside of the program to go get his next offensive coordinator. And he was able to hire those guys as co-offensive coordinators with Josh calling plays, and look at the result in the first game. It was like Kevin Wilson didn't leave.
Well, I was going to say, too, you know, how cool is it that Josh Heupel, what, a decade later, is leading the Sooners with their offense? Yeah, he's a co-offensive coordinator, but that was pretty sweet in the execution in terms of what happened offensively in the Fiesta Bowl.
Well, sometimes you just run into guys that are that special, and let's face it, he's just that special. You know, when Josh played at OU, you know, he was a dynamic player. Josh Heupel is the most important recruit of the Bob Stoops era. He's not the best recruit, but he's the most important. The best recruit, you can argue, it's Roy Williams, Tommy Harris, Adrian Peterson, one of those three guys. But he's the most important because OU didn't have a quarterback at the time. When he came in to play quarterback in 1999, OU was changing offenses totally. Mike Leach was installing his offense, and Josh became the trigger man. And Josh was so smart, so intelligent, such a good leader, he actually accelerated that progress 4 or 5 seasons. And so when they got to 2000, Mark Mangino takes over because Mike takes over at Texas Tech. So Mangino becomes the offensive coordinator, installs more of a run element that takes advantage of the talents of Quentin Griffin, and they win the national championship. But again, Josh is able to accelerate the learning curve for the next quarterbacks, for the offensive linemen, for even the coaches, you know, helping them build this offense for another year or so. And so OU was way ahead of the game when they started to recruit the Jason Whites and the Nate Hibbles and, you know, the Rhett Bomars and the people like that who were highly thought of quarterbacks at the time, the Paul Thompsons and people like that. And that offense has continued to evolve to the point that where it is today. And Josh Heupel's intelligence and his coachability has never been in doubt. When he was at Arizona, and he did the smart thing too. When he was a graduate assistant at OU, he worked in the offensive line. I think in Arizona, he worked with tight ends. He hasn't always been involved with quarterbacks. He's learned what the rest of the offense does. I don't know how much time he's spent on defense, but believe me, he studied defenses enough. He has an idea of what they're doing.
Well, I like the setup, you know, having the co-offensive coordinators, you know, with, of course, Josh Heupel working alongside Jay Norville. I mean, we've seen it work right here at TCU in Fort Worth with having co-offensive coordinators with Justin Fuente and Jared Anderson.
Well, these two guys are friends. They've been grinding with Kevin Wilson on the offensive side. They know how to do it. They both. Jay's already been an offensive coordinator. He's been in the National Football League. Josh has been a quarterback. He hasn't been a coordinator before, but everybody just understands and knows he's a gifted individual as far as intelligence and a coach goes. So it will work out very, very well for them, and it already worked out in game one. They were prolific.
Okay, James Hale, we're quickly running out of time. I did want to get your thoughts on the BCS Championship, the title game, Auburn, Oregon, perfect records, potent offenses, and you just got back from Glendale, Arizona. What do you think about this particular matchup?
Well, I think it's a great one. I can't wait. I will watch it. I'll have a bunch of people over. We'll be watching it. I kind of wish the game was on Saturday night, not Monday night, but whatever. You know, it's going to be a great game. I don't think there's any doubt about it. The great speed of Oregon, you know, against the great quarterback and Cam Newton and the confidence that Auburn has. I like Oregon in the game. I just think their offense is prolific and they play good enough defense to hold you in. Auburn's defense is a little bit better. This reminds me so much of the 71 game between the godfather of the wishbone, Jack Mildren, and his wishbone offense that has still set rushing records that are that are at the top of the charts today against Nebraska and their great defense. Nebraska's defense won out on that day in the game of the century in 71, 35-31. Here, Auburn has a little bit better defense. Oregon has a little bit better offense. And once again, I'm going to pick the offensive team, even though history has shown me that's not really the way to do it. But I'm taking Oregon in the game.
Oh, I like that. And as you said, you know, Chip Kelly has not shown a lot of emotion. We were talking to...
He needs to have more fun.
Yeah, he's awfully intense. But, you know, I've talked to the Oregon contacts up there. They said he's not a media darling. I mean, he is all about business. But he needs to smile every once in a while, though, doesn't he?
Absolutely. You know, have a little fun. You can go to Fogo de Chao and act like, you know, you like the salad at least. I mean, you know. he's just not having any fun. Where are the Mike Leeches of the world when you need them, right?
You got to have a little charisma. But, James, anyways, I look forward to catching up with you. I'll be up there for the Oklahoma Women's Basketball Reunion in the month of February, and we'll look forward to catching up and reliving some good times.
If their post players don't start playing better, they're going to suit you back up again.
I couldn't believe it. I watched TCU play Oklahoma Women's Basketball the other night, and that's exactly what happened. So, sure, you'll get them going, though, by the time tournament comes around.
Absolutely.
Okay, we're going to step aside. Much more straight ahead. Jason Peter joining us with our Under the Helmet segment. We'll be right back.